Let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 4, which I think is your next passage in the series you're doing. Genesis chapter 4. Adam lay with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later she gave birth to his brother, Abel. Now Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, he will suffer vengeance seven times over." Then the Lord put a mark on Cain so that no one who found him would kill him. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Cain lay with his wife, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Enoch. Cain was then building a city, and he named it after his son, Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad was the father of Mahujael, and Mahujael was the father of Methusael, and Methusael was the father of Lamech. Lamech married two women, one named Ada and the other Zillah. Ada gave birth to Jabal, and he was the father of those who live in tents and raise livestock. His brother's name was Jubal, and he was the father of all who play the harp and flute. Zillah also had a son, Tubal-Cain, who forged all kinds of tools out of bronze and iron. Tubal's Cain's sister was Naama. Lamech said to his wives, "Ada and Zillah, listen to me. Wives of Lamech, hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times." Adam lay with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth, saying, "God has granted me another child in place of Abel, since Cain killed him." Seth also had a son, and he named him Enosh. At that time, men began to call on the name of the Lord. Well, Genesis 4 is a great passage for Remembrance Day. It tells the beginning of a story of a world that became consumed by violence. Violence that began in the home, brother against brother, Cain killing Abel, that grew within society, citizen against citizen, Lamech boasting, "I have killed a man for wounding me." And that ends with a world so full of violence. Chapter 6, verse 13, which you'll probably get to in a couple of weeks. Chapter 6, verse 13, that the Lord determined the only remedy was to destroy humanity in a flood and make a fresh start. And all this, the fruit of last week's passage. Was it last week, Genesis chapter 3? Was that last week? Is that what you had? Yep. Adam listening to the seductive lie, you can be as God. You can put yourself at the center. You can make your own rules. You can do as you please. So this morning I want to look at Genesis 4, how this led to the first murder, to a world of violence. And I don't want to, we would miss Genesis 4 completely if we sat here thinking it's a problem out there and it's not a problem in here. That if we sit here thinking, well, I would never do anything like that. You remember Jesus' words, out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, etc., etc. Out of where? Out of the heart, the human heart. My heart, your heart. Remember Jesus' words about, you have heard it said that if anyone commits murder, he's liable to judgment. But I say to you, anyone who is angry with his brother will face judgment, because he knows where anger leads to. And he knows the fruit of the bitter and contemptuous anger that we show to people. So this is for us, okay? And Genesis chapter 4 really tells us three downward steps from wanting to be my own God to murder in the home and violence in society. And the first step is basically indifference to God. So chapter 4 verse 2, Abel kept flocks, Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord, but Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So that's our little passage to start with. Now the word for offering there is a common Hebrew word for tribute. It was basically what you brought to a king. It was a way of acknowledging you were in a covenant relationship with your ruler and you depended upon him for whatever the king brought. Peace, security, prosperity, and so on. So this was simply a way of acknowledging that God was their God and king, and they were his creatures, his servants, and everything they had received had come from him, and they depended upon him for life and breath and everything. It was a fundamental way of saying, you are God and I am not. It was a fundamental way of guarding against the devil's lie, you can be your own God. So that's what they were doing. Each of them had their own different trade. From that trade, they brought their offerings. But the Lord looked with favor on Abel's, but not on Cain's. Now, why is that? Was it favoritism? Could be. There is a long trend through Genesis of God favoring the younger over the older. Isaac, not Ishmael. Jacob, not Esau. Joseph, rather than his brothers, and so on. But verses 6 and 7 suggest otherwise. Because the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why are you downcast? If you do right, won't you be accepted? Something Cain could have done to have been accepted. Another suggestion is what offering that they brought. So if after the service you bring me tea with lots of milk in and three sugars, I won't want it. It'll be an unacceptable offering, however kindly meant. So there's been a long, long idea that the problem with Cain's offering was that it was not a blood offering. And, you know, there's a long history in the Bible with without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. But the tribute offering in the Mosaic law was a grain offering. So I think, and there's nothing in the text to suggest it's what he brought. I think the clue is in the text. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering, suggesting maybe what he could afford to give, what he could spare, whereas Abel brought some fat portions, which was in the day before trendy diets, was the best part of the first fruits, the firstborn of his flock. So he didn't say, "Oh, I'm really glad my sheep have given birth to some lambs. Now I'm going to wait for a while, see which ones are strong, which ones survive the winter, which ones I can spare, and then I will make an offering to the Lord." No, he took the firstborn and offered that immediately to the Lord. So he brought the best portions of the firstborn. Proverbs, the wisdom of the day says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of your crops." So Cain here is not guilty of irreligion. He brought an offering, but he did not honor the Lord with the best, with the first fruits of his crops. That's where I'm going this morning. I mean, you may want to argue later, that's fine. But I do think this is a key point. I do think, you know, it's one of the things that the English have specialized in over recent centuries, you know, reducing the worship of God to token offerings, token gestures. You know, the period when we move from a God-centered view of the world to a man-centered view of the world through our ability to manipulate and control through science and technology. We didn't abandon belief in God, but we rather reduced him to a sort of absentee landlord. So as he wasn't terribly involved in our world, in our minds, we wouldn't be terribly involved in our worship of him. But we would offer him worship on a Sunday, according to ritual, but it wouldn't be what our life was all about. So our hearts remained our own. Our agendas remained our own. And I think that's the religion of Cain, of token offerings. At this stage, it's not open rebellion against God, but he treats God with a certain amount of indifference. And anyone who treats God with a certain amount of indifference and is really nurturing in his heart the belief, "I can be my own God. This is my life. It's my agenda I'm pursuing. I'm in control. Yes, I know there are times when I will need God, so I will keep in his good books, but it's all about me." Who we worship, how we worship, determines all of life. So this morning, Gift Sunday, what have you brought to the Lord today? And what does it convey? Do you really want to run your own life and rely upon yourself, but you know you will need God from time to time? Or that he is your life, your Lord, your all, and you want to invest in his purposes and his future? Because you know he's your maker, and you know more than Cain knew. You know he is your redeemer, that you have been bought with a price. So indifference to God leads then to indifference to sin. So the Lord comes to Cain is angry, his face is downcast. The Lord questions him about that, why that is, and then warns him, the end of verse 7. If you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at the door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. Now, I want you to notice how sin is portrayed here. It's like a wild, it's, sin is crouching like a wild beast. You know, there is a wolf or a lion crouching at your door, ready to spring, overpower you, to devour you. It's no longer portrayed as a serpent, cunning, deceitful, seductive, beguiling. No, here it is, a wild beast ready for rip you apart warfare. And if you don't treat it as a wild beast and arm yourself and guard yourself and be ready to kill it, it will overpower you and devour you. But Cain is not guarding his heart. He's instead nursing his wounded ego. His resentment as firstborn of not being treated as the special one. You know, Jose Mourinho was not the first to say, I am the special one. I don't know how much you can put into meaning of names, but reading verses 1 and 2, the naming of Cain in the context of the promise from Genesis 3, verse 15, basically means Cain is, he's the man. That's Eve's words, effectively. So Cain's growing up thinking, I'm the man. And Abel means it's basically vapor, vanity, a passing breeze. Derek read from Ecclesiastes earlier. You know, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. A bell, all is a vanity. It's the same word. Almost as if, I don't know, Abel was a weakly, sickly child from whom Eve didn't expect very much. So he's the special one. He's the one who's developed this more advanced form of farming than simply looking after a few sheep. And God overlooks him and favors this wimp, this nobody. I'm the special one. So he's nursing his wounded pride. Now, we all do this, don't we? While we're doing that, nursing our wounded pride and our hurt egos, we're failing to recognize what the real problem is, the primary problem. And very often our friends don't help us, do they? We go and talk to our friends about what's happened in our lives, and they say, you've got a right to be angry. Or they might say, you've got a right to be happy. You shouldn't have to endure this anymore. Not many of us have friends who will make us face ourselves and call us to account. But Cain does. He's got the Lord. And the Lord is very good to Cain. Speaks to him as a friend would or as a father. He acts as his counselor. He asks him pertinent, relevant questions. Verse 6, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? Why has this affected you so badly, Cain? What was it you were seeking when you brought the offering? He tries to steer Cain in the path of repentance and reconciliation. It's not a matter of favoritism, Cain. If you do right, will you not be accepted? He foresees the danger that Cain is in and warns him away from it. Sin is crouching at the door. You must master it. He tries to show Cain the true nature of sin. It's crouching there like a wild beast. But Cain just isn't listening. He is indifferent to sin. And that is all too often what we are. You know, we can see sin in other people, but we are indifferent to the sin in ourselves. And for the most part, we take ourselves into catastrophes because our sin is quiet and secret rather than loud and public, and it doesn't register on our conscience. We're so busy thinking about our rights and our hurts, we're not thinking about how we should guard our hearts against evil. So for every overt episode of rage we may later regret, there have been before it dozens of jealousies, half-truths, malicious thoughts which we nurtured and embraced rather than resisting and opposing with fear and vengeance, vehemence, which we would have done if we'd seen sin as it is, as this wild beast waiting to devour us. So indifference to God leads to indifference to sin. And indifference to sin leads to us being hijacked by sin, possessed, controlled by it. So the man who nurses anger in his heart becomes an angry man and becomes in time a man who is defined by his anger, who utterly rejects the counsel of his friends. You know the sort of person I'm talking about here. And indifference to sin leads to indifference to other people. In this case, to Abel, his brother. And it's summed up in Cain's classic answer. "Where is your brother, Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper? Who's he to me? He's nothing. He's a nobody. He just doesn't count." And that, as we know, is not untypical of brotherly relations. And it's a constant theme in the book of Genesis. Ishmael versus Isaac. Esau versus Jacob. Ishmael mocks Isaac, if you like, if you want to read the history. Esau is ready to kill Jacob. And Jacob has to flee. Joseph and his brothers. And I hope you know what they tried to do to him. Now, there is an enormous amount we could explore here today, and we don't have time to do that. Why we have a word for brothers killing brothers, but not a word for sisters killing sisters, for example. Why it is no less a miracle of the Spirit for brothers to live together in unity than it is for sinners to be reconciled to God. But what I want to focus on here is the way this indifference to his brother results in a communication breakdown. So verse 8 in our version reads, "Now Cain said to his brother, 'Let's go out to the field.' And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him." But if your version's anything like mine, you'll notice after the little phrase, "Let's go out to the field," there's a little reference point for a footnote, which is basically saying that in the Hebrew text, that sentence isn't there. That expression, "Let's go out to the field," isn't there. Literally, the Hebrew simply says, "Cain said to his brother Abel, and while they were out in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him." So you can understand why the Greek and Syriac versions have added that sentence. Cain said to his brother Abel, well, what did he say? We are not told. But maybe it wasn't that this slipped out of the Hebrew and the Greek and the Syriac versions needed to add something to it. Maybe it wasn't there at all. Maybe it was Cain said to his brother Abel, but words failed him and violence followed. In other words, he was just too angry to verbalize his feelings. And certainly in cases of domestic violence, that is so often what happens. When words fail, violence follows. We find a similar expression in Joseph's brother's reaction to the way Joseph was favored by his father. And you remember Joseph had this fantastic coat, and he just flaunted his special status over his brothers. And we are told his brothers hated him and couldn't speak peaceably to him. Or more literally, they could not speak him to peace. And there is a learned Jewish commentator who suggests that had the brothers spoken and made Joseph aware of how hurtful his behavior was, they might have spoken him to peace. rather like the way the moderate Muslim, whose name I'm afraid I've forgotten, has recently taught Tony Robinson of the Indian Defence League to peace and to abandon the organisation. But however you read it, in the Genesis account, once again, words failed and violence followed, though Joseph did, by the skin of his teeth, escape with his life. But only just. Now, as believers, we all know the power of the word. Okay, by the word of God, creation came into being. By the word of God, we are born again. And we who are made in his image and speak words know how powerful our words are. With our words, we can build relationships, heal wounds, bring peace. Or with our words, we can wound and injure and assassinate people's characters. Yet perhaps more dangerous than cutting words are simply when words fail altogether, when we just stop speaking to each other. In international conflicts today, we recognize the power of diplomacy to bring peace. So in Afghanistan, we're even talking about talking to the Taliban. Yet so often the real danger for our peace in the modern world is with people with whom we have no conversation whatsoever and where there is no opportunity for diplomacy, al-Qaeda and so on. And the great irony of the 21st century is that having created the technologies of instant global communication, we find ourselves talking less and less with those with whom we disagree. So we have the radicalized killers of the soldier Lee Rigby just down the road from where I live, who are just listening to one voice all the time. And the lone wolf racialist from Ukraine who came over here to kill non-whites and has just been sentenced recently for killing that elderly Muslim man. Whereas in the past, mixed communities used to read the same paper and watch the same TV news. Now we are divided up into little sects of the like-minded who never talk to each other or listen to each other. And I fear the same is happening in the church between the different evangelical tribes. That's another matter. I'm simply trying to say our world is like the world of Genesis 4 and is the fruit of Genesis 3 of yielding to the temptation to believe that I can be my own God, of believing it's all about me. And it's a world where indifference to the Lord leads to indifference to sin. And we see that played out all around us today. We know that. And indifference to sin leads to, especially the sin that's attacking our hearts, leads to indifference to other people who we don't want to get on with, who we don't like, who aren't like us. To an inability to talk peace. And beyond that, we go down the road to violence. And it's a world that's in a grip of a downward spiral. So just compare Genesis 4 with Genesis 3, last week's passage. Eve was talked into sin by the serpent. Cain would not be talked out of it, even by the Lord. Adam confessed his sin but tried to shift the blame. It's a woman. The woman you put here with me. Cain refuses to confess and repudiates all responsibility. Am I my brother's keeper? Whereas Adam appears to have accepted his punishment and put his faith in the provision God made of a son of Eve who would crush the serpent, Cain protests that his punishment is too harsh, more than he can bear. I will be a restless wanderer. anyone who finds me will kill me. Whereas Adam is driven from the garden, Cain goes out from the Lord's presence, verse 16, into a world where the Lord's name is never heard again. It's very remarkable. Up until verse 16, the name of the Lord, the covenant name of the Lord, is mentioned 8 times. Beyond verse 16, it is not mentioned once. That's verses 17 to 24. In Cain's world, you never hear the name of the Lord again. From Cain come cities and civilization and music and technology, but it is a godless world where sin is unrestrained. So when we get to Lamech, we find an even greater hardness of heart than in Cain. Whereas Cain refused to accept responsibility for his sin, Lamech boasts in his sin. Whereas Cain protested at God's judgment, Lamech presumes to act as judge in the place of God and exercises a far more ruthless justice than ever God does. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged 7 times, then Lamech 77 times. It's very pertinent for us to listen to this on Remembrance Day. That's the fruit of us wanting to be our own gods. That was so horribly played out for us in the last century when, you know, our 20th century Lamechs, Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, and all the rest, did what they wanted because there was no God to give an account to. And we see it today in our war crimes tribunal, where the evidence basically shows that there is no evil we are not capable of doing once we have removed from our minds the idea that we can be brought to account for this. If we think we can get away with it, there is no evil we are not capable of. That's one of the lessons of Remembrance Day. But as yet, Genesis 4 is not a world without hope. So the last two verses tell us about the birth of Seth and how in Seth's time, men began to call on the name of the Lord. In other words, they're renewing their covenant obligation to the Lord. They're returning to true worship. Well, how that story played out, how calling on the name of the Lord brought hope, is not mine to talk about. That's for the future, for next week. But let me tell you how the book of Genesis ends. Okay, the story that begins with Cain murdering his brother ends with Joseph forgiving his brothers who tried to murder him. That's the last chapter of Genesis. And Joseph did it when he had all the power of Lamech to repay them 77 times what they'd done to him, when he was the ultimate power, other than Pharaoh, but effectively the ultimate effective power in all of Egypt, which was the superpower of the day. He could have been absolutely ruthless. And his brothers are so afraid of him, they concoct this story about his father saying to them on his deathbed that, Joseph, you must forgive my brothers, your brothers. And what does Joseph say? It's very, very, very interesting. He says to them, am I in the place of God? Most powerful ruler in Egypt, but this is his mind take. Am I in the place of God? You meant it for evil. God meant it for good, for saving many lives. And Joseph points us forward to Jesus, who was handed over by his brothers, but raised by God in order to bring forgiveness to Israel and to all the world. So the Bible story of violence begins with Abel's blood crying out from the ground for vengeance, and it climaxes with Jesus, whose blood has a very different cry. It's a blood that cleanses from every sin. And the story of Cain founding a godless dynasty that boasts in its vengeance is answered by Jesus founding a God-worshipping community of brothers who will lay down their lives for each other and have been taught to forgive not merely seven times, but 77 times. So the challenge to us today is, which family do we belong to? Do we belong to Cain's seed, Cain's line? Or do we belong to Jesus' line, Jesus' seed? How can we be peacemakers in a world of conflict? Three quick points to finish with. One, we need to be reconciled to each other and forgive each other. And for that we need words. So Jesus says, if you're at the altar about to present your gift and there remember your brother has something against you, leave your gift. Go and be reconciled to your brother. He says, if your brother sins against you, you go and speak to him one to one so that you can win your brother over. So we must forgive each other, be reconciled to each other. Secondly, we need to turn from sin back to God and seek God's counsel and God's help to fight against it. It's crouching at the door. Put to death, says Paul, in the name of Jesus. Wrath and anger and rage and sexual immorality and so on. Don't nurture the sins that seem as cute and cuddly as a lion cub because they're all about our hurts and wounds and resentments. Don't nurse them, because when they grow up, they will turn on you and kill you. Turn from them back to God. And then thirdly, we need, of course, to call on the name of the Lord. Acknowledge He alone is God. Renew our obligations to Him, our dependence upon Him. Which is really one reason why we come here every Sunday. To offer not just some gifts in these bags for gift, your monthly gift service, but to offer our lives a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to Him, because He gave His life for us. Three very simple ways to be peacemakers in the world. But let me say, it's not an easy path. This is basically the narrow, hard road that leads to life, as opposed to the broad and easy road of revenge is sweet. Revenge is a dish best served cold that leads to destruction. It's a narrow, hard road. And if you're at that point where you've got to deal with a very difficult brother, you'll know just how hard it is. But it's the road that leads to life.